So, in Donald Miller's book, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, he begins the book with an author's note that says this. If you watched a movie about a guy who wanted a Volvo and worked years to get it, you wouldn't cry at the end of that movie. You wouldn't cry when he drove off the lot testing the windshield wipers. You wouldn't tell your friends you saw a beautiful movie or go home and put on a record and just to think about that story you'd just seen. The truth is, you wouldn't remember the movie a week later, except maybe you'd feel robbed and want your money back. Nobody cries at the end of a movie about a guy who wants a Volvo. But we spend years living those stories and expect our lives to feel meaningful. The truth is, if what we choose to do with our lives won't make a story or a movie meaningful, it won't make our life meaningful either. My question for all of us today is, what sort of story are you living? What sort of story are we living? I jumped at the opportunity to preach today, not because it happens to be my birthday, but because one of the texts of the lectionary for today, 2 Corinthians 5, has been one of my favorite texts to preach from. I looked through the list of Sundays, every corresponding passage, specifically for this text, and there it was, June 13th, on my birthday. And I thought, it's a birthday present from God. It's a sign. But surprisingly, as I prepared for today, I realized I wouldn't be sharing what I normally share from this passage. You see, when I led a Christian homeless ministry in Boston, I used to be asked to speak at all types of groups, youth groups, adult Sunday school classes. I was the guest missions Sunday speaker at churches all over New England. I usually picked from among three passages of scripture, and this was often one of them. I often would talk about God's power to change our lives, to make us new. God's love for us that compels us to serve him. And ultimately would focus on God's call for us to be his ambassadors. However, my focus will be different today. Instead, I'm going to focus on just four verses and share with you a journey I've been on and continue to be on, because I think God is speaking to me through it and maybe speaking to all of us through it. Over the last 6 to 8 months, I have spent time reading and reflecting on my sense of vocation and calling. Partly because I've been reflecting on the fact that as I'm getting older, I have more yesterdays, most likely, than I have tomorrows. Partly because of recent failures in my life. Failures have a way of making you relook at yourself. And partly because in my current career path, I moved to this vocation because I wanted to invest in the lives of young adults. And instead, I spend 80% of my days looking at spreadsheets. So what have I done? I've spent time reflecting on key work experiences. I've reflected on major moments in my life, on the things that bring me joy and meaning. I listened to old sermons that had hit me and rocked me. I am a certified Gallup Clifton Strengths Coach, so I, reflected on my talents and my gifts. I'm a certified Myers-Briggs practitioner, so I reflected on, my personality and how God has made me and maybe what that would mean about what I should do. I've read new books, I reread old ones that I had found helpful as I would think about these things. In the process, I realized that I was starting in the wrong place. I was jumping to what career or job that might fulfill me. But what God was asking me to do was to stop and reflect on my primary calling, our primary calling, which is first to Jesus. God was asking me to consider to live a better story. Our text this morning is from 2 Corinthians 5, verses 6 through 10, and 14 through 17. I'll give you a second. If you have a Bible or if you need to scroll to it on your phone, 2 Corinthians 5, verses 6 through 10, and then 14 through 17. Therefore, we are always confident and know that as long as we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord. For we live by faith, not by sight. We are confident, I say, and would prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So we make it our goal to please him, whether we are at home in the body or away from it. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each of us may receive what is due us for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. Going down to verse 14. For Christ's love compels us, because we are convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. So from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone. The new is here. There's a lot we could say about a text like this. It's theologically dense. Paul throws a lot in this text and actually this whole chapter. I can think of dozens of sermons that could be preached. Paul provides us with several contrasts: away from home and at home. Faith versus sight. Old versus new. There's a lot here. But I want us to focus on just four verses, verses 9 and 10 and 14 to 15. Verse 9, so we make it our goal to please him, whether we are at home in the body or away from it. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each of us may receive what is due us for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. A different sermon might dive into this idea of a believer's judgment before God. There's a lot to think about theologically. That's not this sermon. But what I do want us to note is that in light of the expectation of being face to face with Jesus, Paul makes it his goal to please him. The Greek verb here means to strive eagerly, to aspire earnestly. Paul is saying we should all strive to please Jesus while we're here on earth. And this isn't the only place Paul references this idea of pleasing God. Paul uses this idea throughout his letters. We are exhorted to find out what pleases God and live that way, Ephesians 5:10. We find that financially supporting ministry pleases God, Philippians 4:18. We find that when children obey their parents, Colossians 3:20, they are pleasing God. And in Romans 12:1, Paul says that we please God when we offer our bodies, our whole selves, as a sacrifice to him. When I was in college, I had the opportunity to go to Israel. And we were visiting a bunch of archaeological sites, and at one site, there was a four-horned altar made out of stone. It was an exact replica in size to the four-horned altar that was in the Holy of Holies in the Temple of Jerusalem. Scholars didn't know why this replica was found in this other city, because Jews were only supposed to bring sacrifices in Jerusalem, but there it was. And I saw it, and I handed a camera to someone, and this is back in the day before we had phones that had cameras on them. So I handed my camera to someone, and I ran, jumped onto the altar, and said, "Take my picture. I need to remember what Romans 12:1 actually means. It means laying my life down for God." And so they took the picture. I have to admit, I'm a little embarrassed that I did that. I was recently at the American Natural History Museum with Matea, and you know, you're not allowed to touch anything, any of the sculptures or anything, even the replicas, because the oils on her hands may damage it. And not only did I touch it, but I stood on it. But no one was there to see me do it other than my fellow college students. God says, make it our goal to please him. Going down to verse 14. For Christ's love compels us, because we are convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. Christ's love compels us to no longer live for ourselves, but for him. The NRSV has urges us on. Christ's love urges us on to live for him. And this is in radical contrast for Paul's earlier days of actually persecuting the church. Paul now willingly suffers for those whom he once persecuted, convinced that Christ died for us all, and we are now all raised with him to new life and meant to live for him. No one studies the life of Paul and wonders what made him serve so tirelessly. It was God's love. One commentator notes, Christ's love, expressed preeminently by his giving himself for others, compels Paul and dictates Paul's motives in life, restraining him from a life of self-interest. And even more, Paul believes that the love of Christ had this effect not only on him, but on all of us who are in Christ. Paul says that we too have died to the old life of self-interest. As I was starting to reflect on my sense of calling, one book I went back to that I had read before is a book called The Call by Os Guinness. And I think Os Guinness sums this up really nicely. He says this about our call. Calling is the truth that God calls us to himself so decisively that everything we are, everything we do, and everything we have is invested with a special devotion and dynamism lived out as a response to his summons and service. For Christ's love compels us. I started off this morning by sharing a quote from Donald Miller and asking all of us, what sort of story are we living? Do the stories we live demonstrate a desire to please God? Do the stories we live demonstrate that we are living not for ourselves, but for Christ? In another passage in Donald Miller's book, he says, one day I was watching a reality show on television, and I wondered, what would a show look like if a camera followed me around? I wondered what people would think. That is, setting aside my daydreams, my wants, and my thoughts, and revealing my life through an objective camera lens. The thought was humbling. In truth, I was a person who daydreamed and then wrote down his daydreams. Sure, there were other characters, friends, business associates, but I wasn't living any kind of sacrifice. My entire life was designed to make myself more comfortable, to insulate myself from the interruption of my own daydreams. What I find most challenging about this idea of a camera following me around, like what would the reality TV show of my own life be, is that I think it would tell a very different story than I actually tell about myself, or what I think about myself. In my mind, I'm a very altruistic person whose entire life is focused on making a difference in the world. Honestly, I walk down the hall at work and I'll be like, let's go change the world. And I'm like, but really I'm going to, you know, work on a spreadsheet. And, you know, I spend most of my time at work doing data entry, looking at spreadsheets, at home. I'm spending most of my time working to make Diane and Matea's life comfortable and enjoyable. I just think about that 24/7. I'm thinking about what we should binge watch next on TV, or you'd see me scrolling on my phone a lot. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that rest and play are wrong. I think both are gifts from God and are part of the shalom he promises us. And I'm also a big advocate that you can glorify God in any vocation, and even in the most mundane tasks, like taking out the trash or doing dishes. If you want some inspiration on this, read the short book, The Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. But you see, for me, reflecting over these several months, I've discovered that little of my life is actually spent thinking about God, talking about God, or serving God while serving others. Don't get me wrong, I have my moments. I'll have a day where I actually pray, or I read my Bible, or I try to do something for someone else. But more often than not, on an average day at our house, I'm focused on what TV show I should watch next. I'm not focused on doing much that's meaningful. I am not living a good story. I find this sad because we teach our children, good or bad stories, what is worth living for and what is worth dying for, what is worth pursuing with the stories we live with our lives. And we live in a world where bad stories are constantly being told. Stories that teach us that life doesn't have meaning, that humanity has no great purpose. Story that tells us that fulfillment comes through what we own, how we look, who our friends are, or who we know. Stories that tell us that the point of life is to be entertained and to be comfortable. And honestly, sometimes in our current culture, I think we spend more time trying to please our own children than God. As the author Aldous Huxley remarked in Brave New World Revisited, many of us actually fail to see humanity's, quote, almost infinite appetite for distractions. Almost infinite appetite for distractions. Huxley feared that what we would love, what we would put our affections to, would ruin our culture. There will always be distractions to keep us from living a story of meaning and purpose and focus on living for God. In a moment, I'm going to give you some time to reflect on this, to imagine what would be revealed in your own reality TV show. Now, I realize not everyone has an active imagination as I do. I end most nights by reading comic books. I have a very vivid imagination and can imagine anything. But let me just give us a little tool as we go into this time of reflection. I've often talked about four parts of discipleship: head, heart, hands, and wallet. Head is what preoccupies your thoughts. What do you spend most of your time thinking about? Heart, what do you long for? What and who do you love? And what brings you joy? Hands, what do you do with your time? At work, at rest, and at play. And wallet, how do you spend your money? Do these things reflect a life living for Him? So I'm just going to give us a moment. I'm going to encourage you even to close your eyes and imagine a TV crew in a traditional week following you around. And what would that TV show reveal? What story would that show reveal that you're living? You know, it's not my place to tell you if you're living a good story or not. I honestly believe that's between you and God. God knows your heart and your circumstances. Your now. But if you find yourself after this time of reflection thinking that maybe you want to try and live a better story, as I do, then here are some things to try. First, pray. Ask God to show you how you can tell a better story with your life. Tell Him that you want to give the pen back to Him so He can begin writing a new story with your life. Two, acknowledge and have some grace for where we are now. We are just coming out of a pandemic, so maybe as you just thought about what that TV show in your brain was, we've been through some traumatic times over the last year. Some of the greatest political and social turmoil I think our country's been through. A pandemic where some of us didn't leave our house much for a year. Give yourself some grace for that. This sermon isn't meant to bring guilt. This is a sermon about realignment. Realigning ourselves to the primary calling of us living for God. Find a way to serve others regularly. Service to others always helps us move away from just living for ourselves. Find others who want to live a better story. Donald Miller notes, if your friends are living boring stories, you are probably too. Now, I'm not saying go dump all your friends and family, but I am saying find some folks who are ready to live this sort of radical commitment of life for Jesus. And no, it won't be easy. Donald Miller also notes, here's the truth about telling stories with your life. It's going to sound like a great idea, and you're going to get excited about it. And then when it comes time to do the work, you're not going to want to. People love to have lived a great story, but few people like the work it takes to make it happen. In my own life, as I've been reflecting, I've realized that most of my life and my story reflects a desire to seek comfort for myself and my family. I'm thinking about how will I pay for retirement? How should we be financially okay? And that's where my mind's thinking. Because I want to know, we'll be comfortable. For Christ's love compels us to live not for ourselves, but for him who died for us. Donald Miller challenges us with the reality that we live in a world where bad stories are constantly being told. Stories that teach us that life is more than getting that Volvo, that car we want, or that dream house. It's more than acquiring fame or wealth, and it's more than about entertaining ourselves. But God calls us to live a better story. Let's live a better story, not for our sake only, but for our family's sake and the world's sake. For Christ's love compels us to.